Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I wish I could open up on a real positive note today. Not that I do that all that often, actually, now that I think about it. But I would like to, but I'm not able. I'm just going to go on record, and I don't know if I've actually said this on the show. I may have. Getting to that age where I start repeating myself. I believe we are witnessing the greatest failure of heart in all of human history. Certainly in American history, and perhaps in the history of the world. We're governed by ambitious cowards who've been elected by unambitious, frightened children. And this is the end that they've brought us to, right here up on the precipice of a collapse of our society, of our, well, certainly of our economy, over the fear of a cold, over the fear of catching a cold. It's astonishing. And what's more astonishing is how easily we've all gone along with it. But I don't know. I'm not a revolutionary type of guy. I'm not interested in packing an AR-15 and what were we supposed to do? We're just civilians, for crying out loud. So everyone's got an opinion. There's all kinds of opinions. Everyone's an epidemiologist, an amateur epidemiologist. So we're going to hear from an actual epidemiologist here in just a minute. I'll give you his take. And so I experienced something that was of acute concern to me. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I, along with our children, went to an open-air fish market. An open-air fish market because we could. It was open and we're allowed to go to the open-air fish market. And I approached one of the fishmongers. He was slicing up a fish, and I wanted to know what kind of fish it was. So I asked him, I said, "What are you cutting up there?" And I leaned in, I think, a little closer than 6 feet. And this lady, she said, "Sir, that's my food. Please don't get closer than 6 feet." And I mean, she said it like she was terrified that I was about to infect her with the plague. By standing within 6 feet of her fish. And so I looked in her eyes. I couldn't see her face because she was wearing a mask, of course, which everyone has just, fine. I'm okay with wearing a mask. It's okay. It's fine. I'm not going to beat up people who wear masks, okay? In fact, I just want to say off the top, I think it would have been much wiser for our governing cowards to have just said, isolate those who are at risk. Everybody wear masks and go on about your daily business, but wear masks. I think we could have gotten through this with that. And I don't even know that we needed that.
No.
Anyway, so the fact that we've never ever reacted to a respiratory infection like this ever before, ever, not ever, even once, never, doesn't that mean anything to anyone? Folks, if we're not able at the end of the day, at some point in the not too distant future, if we're not able to look one another in the eyes and admit that we overreacted to this, then we're never going to get past this. We're going to remain in a state of fear like the lady at the fish market, terrified that if someone gets within 6 feet of her fish, she's actually going to catch a disease. She's got more of a chance of catching a disease from the guy chopping her fish up and whatever's on his hands, for crying out loud. All right. In fact, speaking of, so I never thought that this would be allowed to actually grip the nation in real fear enough to actually break everything. I did not think that. before the fish market. And then this story. From the widespread fear file, a survey was carried out, and the survey revealed that 72% of respondents said that they would not feel safe attending a sporting event without a vaccine against the coronavirus. So that's the level of genuine fear that the media and the government has instilled in people. Because people are generally ignorant, and they have generally short memories. And most of them aren't all that bright. I don't know if you've noticed that. So almost 3/4 of the population is genuinely scared that they can never go to a baseball game again unless there's a vaccine. Only 13% of respondents said that they would feel safe going to a baseball game. And more than 3/4 of the respondents to this poll, more than 3/4 said that the shutdown came at the right time. So I'm definitely in the minority, because I think this is the greatest mass freak out and embarrassment ever in the history of the planet. And I think all of you who are in this 76% should be ashamed of yourselves. But that's where we're at. So how do we turn this thing back on if everybody's afraid? How do we do that? Maybe we don't. Or at least never to the level we had before. We're going to be governed by the socialists now, because they've scared us sufficiently that we're willing to give up our liberty so that we won't catch a cold. All right, now, let's go to the... From the widespread data file, there's data everywhere. Everyone's looking at data. Everyone's an epidemiologist, and everybody's a statistical analysis expert these days. Amateurs. I'm not. I'm a keen observer of human behavior and politics, but I don't know about the data. But here's what the data is saying. At least as of last Saturday over in Italy, Italy recorded its first drop in critical patients last Saturday. Its first drop since the outbreak began. Their civil protections chief called the drop a very important data point, possible turn in the fight against the disease. They've got well over 16,000 dead. 16,000 Italians have been recorded as dying from COVID-19. Well, and we'll see how that data shakes out. Because even the mouthpiece there for Trump admitted that they've taken a very liberal approach to counting the bodies. And so, yeah, and we already outlined why that was going to happen. But that's great news for Italy. I wish they could have gotten where they are a lot sooner, but they, none of us can, and we'll get into that with our quote from an epidemiologist, a real live epidemiologist. But we go from there, we go into the real science file, where research is taking place out at Stanford University, and 3,200 people have been tested at 3 Bay Area locations using antibody tests for COVID-19. Basically, they're testing their blood to find out if they've had the virus and gotten over it. Well, the data that's been collected so far could help to prove the hypothesis that COVID-19 first started spreading in California sometime in the fall of 2019. That may be one explanation for the state's lower than expected case numbers. As I said on the show, based on travel from China in the fall and winter of 2019, California should be a relative bloodbath, and it hasn't been. Why? Well, this may be one of the reasons, is that Californians may have already gained some sort of herd immunity against this virus. Doctors in California reported an early flu season in the state. And during that time, travel between China and America was happening unfettered. Even direct flights were arriving from Wuhan into San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego. So if researchers tell us, if Californians were exposed earlier than the rest of the country, Californians may have had a chance to build up some herd immunity, which, as I said, may explain why the bloodbath never happened, despite Eric Garcetti wetting his pants every morning right alongside the governor, Gavin Newsom. They had to change pants 3 or 4 times a day, I believe, with all the wetting going on. The panic. Ambitious cowards elected by unambitious, frightened children. And this is where we end up. All right. Meanwhile, let's get some good news in. Can we get some good news in? I want some good news. Here we get good news. We go to Israel. Hezbollah commander Ali Mohammed Yunus was killed by unknown assassins in southern Lebanon last Saturday. He was found stabbed to death in his vehicle. Some people suspect it may have been Israeli intelligence. Huh. No way. Yeah, I wouldn't think that. I would first, has he been tested for coronavirus then? Yunus was a close associate of the Quds Force commander Qasem Soleimani, who Donald Trump and our military so gracefully dispatched back in 2019. So there's some good news amidst all this. No, there is no report on whether or not Ali Mohammed Yunus had the coronavirus in his system. It's quite possible he did, seeing as he worked with a lot of Iranians, and there's a lot of Iranians who apparently have the coronavirus. Testing is expected to be returned. All right, we go from there to the war file. And folks, I hope you don't think I'm making light of the virus. I'm not making light of the virus. But this virus cannot now dictate how we all behave for the rest of our lives, okay? No other virus has ever done that. Well, except maybe the AIDS virus. Maybe the AIDS virus actually changed. You know, remember when AIDS came and we had the lockdown and they closed all the gay bars and all the bathhouses? Oh, no, that's right. They didn't do that. But I've already addressed that on the last show. Let's go. Some more good news, folks, from the war file. We go to Stuttgart, Germany, where AFRICOM is reporting that a senior al-Shabaab leader in East Africa has been killed in an airstrike in Somalia. His name was Youssef Jis. He was one of 3 al-Shabaab members killed in the April 2nd airstrike. AFRICOM reports that Youssef Jis was violent, ruthless, and responsible for the loss of many innocent lives. That's according to Commander General Stephen Townsend over there at AFRICOM. So some more good news. You have to reach far to try to find some good news amidst all this long, dark cloud we've been under for so long. And that apparently the maniacal left are intent on keeping us under this cloud as long as they possibly can, which is not surprising. In fact, you know the radicals in the 60s, like the Rules for Radicals, what's his name, the guy who wrote that book? Alinsky? I mean, the radical left has written books about doing exactly what's happening right now, overwhelming, collapsing the system, and moving in with the socialist rescue plan. And if it was ever happening, it sure seems like this is it. Or this is their best opportunity yet. This is the best mechanism they've found because they've actually done it. I mean, they've actually collapsed the system. At least ostensibly, the surface. They've shut us down. They've locked us in our houses. They haven't destroyed the economy yet, but they very well may have. They very well may have because people, they've been scaring the hell out of people for a month straight. 2 months straight. Just scaring the hell out of people every day, and now they're scared. And scared people don't behave well, and they don't respond well. And they don't come back well. I'm telling you, there are people in the media and in politics and in entertainment who should be arrested at the end of all this and charged with inciting a riot or a panic. I don't know what you call it. But what's being done is criminal. It's absolutely criminal. And just to put a punctuation mark on that, we go to the bad Pope file. The communist Pope Francis says that he doesn't know if coronavirus is nature's revenge, but he says it's certainly nature's response. He says we have to slow down our rate of production and consumption. Fires, earthquakes, nature is throwing a tantrum so that we will take care of her, says the communist Pope. Speaking of people who should probably be charged with a crime, Maybe the Pope should be charged with a crime. All right. Anyway, it's just, well, here's where we are, folks. Here's where we find ourselves, and I'm glad you're here to go through it with us. View. That's for all of you unambitious, terrified children out there. Come out from under your bed. It's going to be okay. Anyway, I looked at the lady in the fish market and I said, look, lady, I didn't spit on your fish. Stop freaking out. And you know what I hate about this whole mask situation? Although the bird whisperer has made, she's made her statement about it. I posted that up on Facebook. The bird whisperer is wearing one of those plague masks from the 1300s. Giant leather contraption with the bird's beak. Anyway, she gets a lot of chuckles and thumbs up, but not as much as I would have expected. I would have expected her to get rounds of applause for wearing that, just to point out how ridiculous all this is, but she doesn't. We go out in public and she gets looks like, I think some people are thinking that it's real, and maybe they should have one of those. I'm waiting for someone to come up and ask her, where did you get that? How do I get one? Is that what I need? I'm so scared. Go change your shorts. Unbelievable. All right, and here's the thing, folks. I'm not making light of the virus, okay? But I don't make light of cancer or heart disease or diabetes or suicide or all the other things that are killing people every day that maybe aren't as glamorous or just aren't as, they're not as fashionable as the coronavirus is at the moment. And folks, this is only a moment in time. Maybe I should get right to this epidemiologist because I don't know. All right, here we go. All right, so I've got Knut Witkowski, PhD. So he produced a physical doctorate. This is a smart guy, okay? He is an epidemiologist, the former head of the Department of Biostatistics, Epidemiology, and Research Design at Rockefeller University in New York City. Okay, so this guy's a genuine scientist. He is an epidemiologist. All right, the story comes to us courtesy of Daniel Payne at the College Fix. I got it off of WorldNet Daily. Dr. Witkowski says that, quote, he says the virus could be, quote, exterminated within weeks if people were allowed to lead normal lives and the vulnerable were sheltered until the virus passes. Now, why does that have the ring of truth to it when I read that? It's because that's how we've dealt with viral outbreaks every other time throughout all of human history. That's how we've dealt with them. We've never done this before. Never. And it was the communist Chinese who brought us the idea of lockdown. Keep that in mind. It was the commies who lied to us about it and left us with enough uncertainty that our politicians, who are cowards, lost heart, frightened the people into a panic. Not practically. It's a panic. When there's no toilet paper on the shelves, that's an embarrassing panic. All right, so he says, here we go. He says, people are trying to flatten the curve. I really don't know why. If you flatten the curve, says Dr. Witkowski. You also prolong. You prolong it, and it takes more time. He says, quote, I don't see a good reason for a respiratory disease to stay in the population longer than necessary. The only thing that stops respiratory disease is herd immunity. He says about 80% of the people need to have had contact with the virus, and the majority of them won't even have recognized that they were infected. Mild symptoms, and especially if they're children with this particular disease, it doesn't seem to affect children nearly as horrifyingly as we were all told it would. Witkowski said the standard cycle of a respiratory disease is 2 weeks, after which it's gone. Gone. Everyone's panicked and looking for a virus, or I'm sorry, everyone's panicked and looking for a vaccine. We already have a vaccine. It's called your immune system. The doctor says, quote, you cannot stop the spread of a respiratory disease within a family. You cannot stop it from spreading with neighbors, with people who are delivering, with physicians, anybody. People are social, and even in times of social distancing, they make contact, and any one of those contacts could spread the disease. he says it'll go slowly, and so we will not build up the herd immunity, but it will happen, and it will go on forever unless we let it go. Like I said on the show last week, folks, we're all going to end up having to get this. So get out from under your bed and stop crying. And stop letting the communists and the socialists take everything from us. I mean, how do you think we get this back? What they've already taken, how do we get it back? We don't. It's already the biggest mass freak out in history. People are embarrassing me. and here's another indicator, or I should say this is this next story. Helps me to more firmly believe that I am correct in not being hysterical and thinking that the lockdown and the shutdown was an enormous mistake, not just an overreaction that we'll be able to look back on later and maybe analyze. No, it was an enormous mistake. Perhaps the biggest mistake ever made by governing officials in history, certainly in American history. And how do I know that? Because Zeke Emanuel disagrees with me. Ezekiel Emanuel, who works for Joe Biden for some reason, I have no idea. He said that Americans could be dealing with strict social distancing measures for 18 more months. And the U.S. will not be able to return to normalcy until we find a vaccine or effective medications. You know what, Zeke? You're wrong. You're a hyper-panicked, power-mad idiot. And if you expect grown men and women to buy this, well, maybe you're right, actually. I mean, I'm not going to buy it, but I think there's enough people who are actually scared and ignorant enough that they are going to buy it. So Ezekiel Emanuel may be more right as far as how things turn out than I am, because I think we get this back somehow. I do. And I think it's God. God is our only hope, because only God is bigger than the government. God is bigger than the government. But we're not. We're a lot smaller than the government, and we can be controlled by the government. We can be told what to do by the government. Because what are we going to do? Pick up guns and start shooting at the government? Yeah, that'll get you far. There's nothing we can do against the government, but God can humble the government. And so somehow God will get us out of this. And it'll be through one man, I believe. And of course, I mean, Jesus Christ in general, but I mean an actual man on the planet right now who's going to somehow stand up and like slap everybody in their collective face and give them a shake and say, stiff upper lip, get back out there. All right. I'm willing to be that man. You can take your collective face slapping right now. Zeke Emanuel, by the way, is one of the architects of Obamacare. He works for Biden's Public Health Advisory Committee. That's what he's done his whole life, Zeke Emanuel. But the article that I pulled down from Fox News says that Ezekiel Emanuel's statements are consistent with statements from the Trump administration's medical advisors, which they are. So, all the bureaucrats, they want this to go on. They want more power. You know, humanity has always suffered. One of our greatest flaws as human beings is the desire to lord it over other people. So we all have it to a certain degree. The desire to lord it over other people. And the people who express that in the worst possible way are the people who seek to be democratically elected to power. Those are the people who most want to lord it over other people. And then they hire people who want to lord it over other people. They hire generally incompetent, mid-level intelligence people who really enjoy lording it over other people. If you've ever been to the DMV, you know what I mean. That's one of our greatest flaws as humans. And it's something that humility can help you overcome the lust to lord it over other people. But the bureaucrats want more power. They want to lord it over people. Fauci and Birx, they never want this to end. Not only can they be famous, but they can lord it over people every day. And for some reason, people in government apparently derive some either joy or some level of self-esteem by just knowing that they can impact and influence decisions we make in our daily life. They want to have an influence on what you do, what you think, where you go. They love that. Now that I cannot relate to, because I really don't care what you do in your daily life. In fact, if you go a whole day without thinking about me, it's okay with me. But it's not okay with them. And so now we've just given them a mechanism by which they can lord it over us forever, every day. How do you take that back from people who that's their whole life ambition? How do you take that back? Well, anyway, so Fauci wants more, Birx wants more, Pelosi wants more, Schumer wants more, 90% of the Republican Party wants more, 110% of the Democrat Party want it more. They want us locked down, and they want us social distance, and they want us scared. So at this point, it looks like Donald Trump might be the only man in the government who does not want more of this. I think Donald Trump has overcome his flaw that we all have of enjoying lording it over people. I think he overcame that via success and a lot of tough life lessons. The more successful you are, the less you need to lord it over other people. But he might be the only guy. I mean, I'm sure there are some congressmen out there. I'm sure. I think Donald Trump might be the only guy or one of very few in government who actually wants this to end and for this mass spastic hysterical episode to finally come to a rational conclusion. But he may not be powerful enough to do it. He doesn't have the power to. How do you overcome the fear that the media is pushing into the consciousness of every American every day? And the gullible buy into it. Folks, we're so scared of catching the cold that we've locked down civilization. We've knocked the legs out from underneath a society for fear of catching a cold. All right. Our grandparents stood up against not the fear of catching a cold, but the fear of getting your legs blown off, or the fear of being put into a gas chamber, or being shot, or being blown to pieces on the battlefield, and save the world from the maniacs, the socialists who wanted to take it then. They just had a different face back then. It was the Nazis, and we defeated them. And here we are, just a few generations later, and we can't leave our houses for fear of catching a cold. We're going to squander everything that they saved. Everything they saved is going to be squandered for fear of catching a cold. If it weren't so tragic, I would laugh. Zeke Emanuel, one more from the Dim New World file. He wrote a piece back in 2017. And remember, Zeke Emanuel disagrees with me. He wrote a piece in 2017 titled, "Why I Hope to Die at 75. It's an article in the Atlantic magazine you can read. He says, "Doubtless death is a loss. It deprives us of experiences and milestones, of time spent with our spouse and children. In short, it deprives us of all the things we value. But living too long is also a loss. It may not be worse than death, but it is nonetheless deprived. We are no longer remembered as vibrant and engaged, but as feeble, ineffectual, and even pathetic. For many reasons, says Zeke Emanuel, 75 is a pretty good age to aim to stop. Now, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, Ezekiel is only 62 years old, but he has joined 77-year-old Joe Biden's campaign. So he's got that going for him, I guess. Anyway, Zeke, I'm going to check in with you at 75 and see if that's still how you feel. But you know what? This guy's so evil, he might still feel that way. I'm Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Now I'm distracted. we'll get back. We'll get back here. I'm having a bit of a respiratory issue right now. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, no.
Chest is tight. I'm having a hard time breathing. I think there's something in the air. Some pollen or I don't know what's floating around out here, but it's definitely getting to me. Oh, yeah. I went and took an allergy test because I've been having these respiratory issues. I told you people I quit smoking. It's because I started having these respiratory issues. It's not because I wanted to quit smoking. I enjoyed smoking quite a lot, but I had to quit because I couldn't breathe. So I'd be waking up at night thinking, okay, I'm going to die. And when you think you're going to die, you'd be amazed at what you can do. You can even quit smoking because, I thought I was going to die. Well, it turns out that I had to quit smoking under false pretenses because it turns out the real culprit was my daughter's rabbits. I'm allergic to my daughter's rabbits is what the problem is.
And the
interesting thing, yeah, so go get a pack of Newports now. No, I'll probably go with the not smoking because it's definitely better since I stopped smoking. Now I just wake up uncomfortable. I don't think I'm going to die. So the not smoking is probably a wise a wise career choice. But I still get this I still get the stuffiness in my lungs, and I get to, anyway, it's I'm having it right now, and I apologize for that. But oddly enough, speaking about lording it over other people, oddly enough, the doctor told me on Tuesday that I was allergic to the rabbits and the rabbits should move out of the house. But the rabbits are still in the house. Oddly enough. In fact, I'm just now realizing that the rabbits have not left the house, and why is that? Okay, so anyway, I'll work on that later. Obviously, I have some negotiations that I have to engage in regarding the location of the rabbits that are making Daddy sick. But we go to the widespread tyranny file, where churchgoers in Greenville, Mississippi, from King James Bible Baptist Church and Temple Baptist Church, well, they tried to hold services at church, and the pastors were very creative. What they did was they broadcast themselves on the radio and had their church members park in the parking lot like a drive-in theater from the 1970s. Remember those? And they'd say, okay, dial your radio to 93.7, and you could hear your pastor preach, and everybody keeps their windows up because we're all terrified children. You roll your windows down, you might catch a cold, and that, of course, we know that could kill you. So anyway, but you know, we're not revolutionaries. We're just trying to get by with all this. We're not going to pick up guns and go charge the mayor's house or burn it down. We're just trying to hold church, and I think that's a pretty creative way to do it. But what happened at King James Bible Church is as the preacher was preaching the message, the police surrounded the parking lot. There's video of it, folks. It's chilling and eerie what happened. And this happened at two churches because the mayor felt like, who is the mayor? I should mention this mayor's name. I can't find his name. I should have written down. Oh, Mayor Simmons. Where is it? I just want to call Mayor Eric Simmons, one of the most cowardly, ambitious fools, one of the most corrupt and tyrannical men in American history. Mayor Eric Simmons of Greenville, Mississippi, wrote each member of these churches who attended $500 tickets. And not per car. Every individual got a $500 ticket. Wow. I can't wait till this goes to court. Well, this will be a barometer of how much of our collective minds have we actually lost. If these people have to pay these tickets, we have lost our minds. It's over. You might as well move to Zimbabwe, because America is done. Anyway, Mayor Eric Simmons should be arrested by the State National Guard and locked up for the duration of the pandemic. All right. Meanwhile, some more good news. And this is a really important one, folks, because I'm convinced that we can suffer a month of this and recover if we haven't totally lost courage, which some of us haven't. So at least we're going to make an attempt at getting this thing back. But more than a month, and the way finance works, billing cycles, things like that, more than a month, and the damage is going to exponentially increase. The permanent damage is going to exponentially increase if this goes on for more than a month. And so underlying all that was this oil war between Russia and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia started pumping crude and Russia quit OPEC. I'm not sure exactly all the details, but basically the price of oil has dropped through the floor. And then you add on top of that, nobody's flying, nobody's driving. Dramatic reductions in transportation. And things look very bad. But Saudi Arabia and Russia have at least agreed in principle to a deal. The Saudis say they'll cut production by 10 million barrels a day. Okay. The deal is conditional on the consent of Mexico. I haven't heard yet if Mexico has signed off on this. Oil, the price of oil reached an 18-year low last month. So, but if these... these two malevolent dictatorships, Saudi Arabia and Russia, if they're able to make nice, that will help to, well, maybe just put a floor underneath all this. That's what we need right now, is we need somebody to start establishing a floor and start establishing the idea that just like every other cold virus that has ever come, it has come and it has gone, ladies and gentlemen. It has come and it has gone. You people get that through your heads. You don't have to be a doctor to understand that. All you have to do is live for, I don't know, you could be 10 years old and know that. All right. Now we go from there to the widespread hypocrisy file. Well, where Omar Barghouti, the founder of the anti-Israel boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and commonly known as the BDS movement, he says that this coronavirus pandemic cannot be a honeymoon for Israel. No, we still need to keep up the pressure on Israel. And he says if you use medical equipment from Israel, that's not a problem. Also, if the Israelis come up with the vaccine, I'll take it. And you should take it too. If the Jews come up with effective treatments, he says he's willing to have them. And he encourages others as well. Because, hey, we can take the good stuff from the Jews, right? Let's push them into the sea after that. Anyway, I think there's probably a greater than 90% chance that whatever fixes this comes from a Jew. You want to bet? All right. So the founder of BDS says he'll take whatever the Jews will give him as he's trying to push him into the sea. All right. Widespread hypocrisy. Meanwhile, there has been a dramatic fall in the rate of crime in America. over the past several weeks, as you can well imagine, except for the crime of leaving your house and going to church. That seems to be on the rise. But generally, crime is down. But Idris Abdus Salam, that's the man's name, Idris Abdus Salam, was arrested for stabbing and killing three women, Joyce Whaley, Patricia Denise, Nib, and Nettie Spencer. He stabbed them to death. He stabbed another fourth woman who remained in the hospital at last we heard. When police arrived on the scene, Abdul Salam was holding a knife. He refused to drop the weapon, so the police opened fire and pronounced him dead. So we'll assume they shot him. But the urinalist says the police opened fire and pronounced him dead. Somewhere in between those two events, bullets hit this guy, I'm going to assume. And thank heaven for that. Three of the victims were employees at the truck stop. One victim was a customer. Nobody knows why this happened. Why does Idris Abdus Salam go ballistic at a truck stop and start stabbing women to death? Nobody knows. Could it be because ISIS has encouraged radical Islamists to stab people? Could that be? Well, it's not mentioned in the article. So I will let you know that every day that we talk about the coronavirus and we obsess over the fact that we might catch a cold, ISIS is encouraging people to stab as many people as they can. That's still going on, just so you know. It's not known yet if Abdus Salam had the coronavirus. If he did, he will be classified as a coronavirus death. All right, now from the widespread opinion pile. Pile, did I say? Well, that kind of tells you how I feel about other people's opinions. Because everybody's got one in this, right? And we all want to be right. I'm as guilty of this as the next guy. We all think we know what's going on. And we all want to be right. I had a friend of mine on Facebook. He said, you know, we all think we know a lot, but we really know very, very little. And in general, that's true. When it comes to managing a respiratory viral epidemic, we do know a pretty good bit. We know a lot about how to manage a respiratory viral pandemic. Why? Because we do it all the time. We've done it all the time. We've just never done this. So that should be an indication that something's wrong. All right, from the widespread opinion file, I'll say file because this is Victor Davis Hanson. He wrote in National Review, which I can't believe I used to subscribe to that magazine. Anyway, I used to be so gullible. Anyway, Victor Davis Hanson says post-virus America can awaken from this shutdown in one of two ways. We can wake up as we did on December 8th, 1941, in reference to the aforementioned victory in World War II over the fascists and the socialists who wanted to take everything we have from us and then lord it over us for the rest of our lives. That's what the Nazis were doing in Europe. That's what the Japanese were doing in Asia. The Axis powers were socialist revolutionaries who wanted to take our freedom and all of our stuff and then lord it over us for the rest of our lives. And on December 8th, 1941, we woke up and we realized that we had to defeat them, and we did. And Mr. Hansen says we can wake up that way. Or he says our other choice is to keep on bickering, suffering amnesia, and remaining vulnerable. He says we can scapegoat and play the blame game. We can talk about how the virus affected particular groups and races. We can decide that it's mean and racist and xenophobic to hold the Chinese government accountable for what they've done. We can ridicule Americans again, making their own things, right? Moving our factories back home. He says we can ridicule that and call it protectionism. He says we can conduct endless congressional inquiries about what all has happened. Maybe we can even impeach the president again. So Victor Davis Hanson closes by saying, in other words, the choice is ours. whether America awakens as a roaring giant or as a crying baby. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Okay. Well, it's funny how Victor Davis Hanson cautions us against being crying babies when we're definitely thinking in the same vein. So the fact that Zeke Emanuel disagrees with everything I think, and Victor Davis Hanson generally agrees. That again leads me to believe that I am correct in my assessment of the greatest mass freakout in all of history. One of the most embarrassing episodes we'll ever have to tell our grandchildren about if we're able to regain what we've handed over to the socialist, the radical socialists who want to take all of our stuff and lord it over us for the rest of our lives. If we can take it back. All right, meanwhile, we go to the science, really, file, where it's being reported in sciencenews.org. .org, that must mean they're serious. It's being reported that SETI is experiencing a renaissance. SETI, S-E-T-I, is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and a couple of billionaires... A Russian and a, let's see, Israeli and a Russian billionaire, two geniuses, have invested $100 million in bigger and better telescopes, and now they're probing deeper and deeper into the night sky. Sophisticated computational tools are poring over massive data sets on a wider variety of frequencies. And observatories around the world, son, are performing regular observations. As part of our new SETI renaissance called Breakthrough, listen. Breakthrough, listen. Shh. Listen. So far, SETI scientists have found nothing but radio silence. But, SETI's collective observing power will make scientists 1,000 times more likely to find extraterrestrials during this decade than they were during the 2010s, children. So don't give up hope. Listen. Shh. So they'll be 1,000 times more likely. Well, that's interesting, but keep in mind, folks, that 1,000 times zero is zero. So keep looking. Keep looking, folks. Shh. Shh. Listen. All right. So some silliness just knows no bounds. last week, I made the comment that it's quite possible that hundreds, even thousands of families could discover homeschooling as a legitimate option for their children. And as you know, I and my extremely attractive audio engineer have homeschooled our three daughters from day one. They've never set foot in a public school ever. Have they ever even set foot in one? I'm wondering. Even for, like, some other unrelated event.
Not even bathroom use.
Yeah, we never even stopped there to use a bathroom. Or never. They've never set foot in a... So we encourage you, if you haven't looked into it, you should. Because it's liberating, number one. It's a lot easier to shelter in place, I can tell you that. but apparently, so all the public schools, they shifted to this distance learning, online distance learning. Tune in, kids. Come on. You have your teacher up there on the screen. Well, about half of the public school kids, about half, have not attended a single distance learning class since they shut the schools down. Believe it or not. Shocking, isn't it? Nearly half, nearly half of public middle school and high school students aren't attending online classes. This is according to a poll of 400. I'm sorry, a poll of about 1,000 teenagers by Common Sense Media, conducted with SurveyMonkey. This report comes from NPR. I'm sorry, 47%. I'm sorry, did I say 41? 47% of public school students say they haven't attended a single online or virtual class. 18% of private school students said they'd skipped out on the distance learning. Okay. Anyway, so we haven't had to do distance learning here at the McBurney compound. We haven't been practicing social distancing either because it's a respiratory virus, we're all going to give it to each other, and we do all the time. All right. we go from there to the justice file. Oh, this is disturbing. I don't think I want to do this. Let's go instead to the economics file, where gas has dropped below $1 a gallon, as low as 78 cents per gallon. The downside, it's in Minnesota. Yeah, 78 cents, but you have to go to Minnesota to get it, or even worse, you have to live in Minnesota. No, but I love the people of Minnesota. It's just the cold and the rain and the snow and the sideways sleet that I have a problem with. Other than that, Minnesota's fabulous. And then there's the mosquitoes in the summer and the oppressive humidity. But other than that, it's a wonderful place. Gas below $1 a gallon is not good news. That is definitely a signal of terrible economic conditions. But like I said, if the Russians and the fascists and the Russians and the Saudis, that's redundant. If they can play nice, we might put a floor underneath this gas issue, and that might help us establish a floor to this whole rather embarrassing. Now, we go from there to the widespread egomania file, where we'll have there was an interview with Bill Gates on CNBC's Squawk Box. And what did Dr. Gates have to say? Doctor. Yes, Dr. Gates. I believe he's gotten what do they call that degree where you don't actually go to school and they just give it to you like Oprah got? An honorary degree. Bill Gates is now an honorary PhD epidemiologist, from what I understand. And he's lauding China's efforts, right? So if Bill Gates agrees that China locking down Wuhan was a good idea, I have a feeling I'm right that it was wrong. That's all. I mean, I don't gauge everything by who disagrees with me, but some things I do. Oh, and then there's the fact that we've never, ever done this ever in human history, ever, never, not even once, ever. There's that. I think that mitigates, that means something to me anyways. But Bill Gates says that China's efforts, which he called extreme intervention, which we call tyranny, and also lying and dissembling and deceiving, but he calls it extreme intervention, and he describes the fact that China was able to utilize extreme intervention to crush that epidemic. Crush it. Crush that epidemic. Bill Gates says, we're going to have this intermediate period of opening back up, and it won't be normal until we get this amazing vaccine to the entire world. That's a direct quote from Bill Gates. What amazing vaccine? We don't have an amazing vaccine. Well, we're going to open up slowly. Before we have a vaccine, we can maybe do manufacturing. We can probably do construction. We can do probably, because a number of young people involved, we could do education again. But we're going to have this. We're going to let these bozos dictate to us when we get back to normal? This is unbelievable. I watched a TED Talk by this guy. He's not that bright. How did he accumulate all his billions? You know, God bless him and his money. That's great. I'm not going to take advice on how to handle a pandemic and a massive loss of common sense and just, I mean, not even, you don't even have to be brave, folks. We don't have to storm the beaches at Normandy. We just have to go get the cold, catch a cold, and then live through it. All right. From the, I don't know what to call this. Basically, I got a report from Uncovered DC. They report that federal and state governments were completely unprepared to handle an event like this. How about that, right? The governments at all levels, they say here, were tested and found wanting. Boy, this national stockpile of protective masks depleted during the swine flu epidemic of 09 to 10 was never restocked.
That's wrong.
Yeah, well, that's the government, right? They're too busy handing out methadone and condoms to stockpile, to do the things that government actually should do, like prepare for disasters and pandemics. In 2009, work began on a vaccine to prevent contracting coronavirus, but it wasn't followed up to completion. Why? Well, they don't have to explain why. They're just allowed to get away with this. And now they're locking us in our houses, the same people who blew this. All right. Trump has unleashed the full power of the private sector, however. Not since World War II has the private sector been enlisted by the government for such a widespread war effort. And Trump frequently states this country is now locked in war with invisible enemy. Okay, well, that's all well and good. One good thing that will come out of this is that we may figure out a way to manage coronavirus. Because there's lots of different coronaviruses, folks. It's called the cold. It's called the common cold is a coronavirus. And when it first came, we had no immunity to it. Guess what? We almost all lived through it. And then we lived through the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. All right, but folks, if you think this is a war, that's because you just don't know what war is. I'm sorry. Building ventilators and stitching masks and then laying around watching Netflix and eating Cheetos is not the equivalent of storming the beaches at Iwo Jima. I'm sorry. And if it makes you feel better to compare yourself, well, that's, I guess, for your own mental health. Or your own sense of identity and, but please, folks, to call this a war, this is the biggest. In fact, the people who stormed the beaches of Iwo Jima, they would wet themselves laughing at the hysteria. These guys went into the malaria-filled jungles of Asia, and we're scared of catching a cold. So scared that we can't even get out of our. It's just unbelievable. farmers have had to start destroying crops. They've had to plow under millions of pounds of perishable food, tomatoes, lettuce, green beans, because the growers lost all their customers at all the restaurants. Wow. No market existed for the products. They couldn't even find food banks because these are perishable foods. The closure of food service establishments, restaurants. This is an enormous loss. Just enormous. And that doesn't get fixed overnight because you can't just make tomatoes grow overnight. You can make tomatoes grow. I don't want to be misunderstood. I usually can't make tomatoes grow. I don't have a lot of luck with that. But there are people who that's what they do. They make tomatoes grow. But they don't grow overnight, folks. All right. Joel Osteen. I don't care about Joel Osteen. Zoom. Listen to this. I didn't know about. As soon as I read this article, I deleted Zoom on my computer. I had Zoom. Some of my business associates use Zoom for meetings, but the Zoom installer was installing mini web servers on your computer. I did not know that, and it wasn't taking them off even when you uninstalled Zoom. Oh, great! I uninstalled it, but it's still on there. So this Zero Hedge article says, "Look, Zoom is basically malware." And it leaves your device open to all manner of vulnerability. Apple even had to push out an unscheduled update to fix Zoom's problems. Zoom is sending telemetry data about you to Facebook, even if you don't have a Facebook account. Avind Narayanan, a professor of computer science at Princeton, distilled it down thusly. Let's make this simple. Zoom is malware. Okay, so I deleted it off my computer, and I may go down to the Apple Store and have a geek actually look at it. Now, we go from there to the widespread dissembly file. Where at the briefing, this is what I referred to early. Deborah Birx, the mouthpiece for the deep state. I don't want to call her the mouthpiece for Donald Trump, but her and this other bozo, Fauci, they're the deep state mouthpieces. She says that the United States has taken, quote, a liberal approach, unquote, in the way doctors classify deaths from the virus. The intent is right now, she actually said this. When I first heard about this, I thought this was something of a conspiracy theory. Because people said, no, the CDC is changing the way they do the death certificates. And it was from some... Anyway, the sources weren't the most trustworthy. So I didn't really put much stock in that. But here she is actually saying it. Live, in front of God and everybody. The intent... is if someone dies with COVID-19, we're counting that as they died of COVID-19. That's what she said. She said it. Okay. And the town hall article ends with the reporter saying, it's the lethality of the virus that's been the driving force behind a countrywide economic shutdown. The reason we panicked so badly, folks, is because the Chinese lied. And we got scared with some legitimate fear, not knowing how lethal this virus was. So there was some legitimate fear for which China should be punished severely. Severely punished for what they did in lying to us and leaving us without the data to make the right decisions. But, folks, as the data has come in, well, we didn't even need data. I don't even want to revisit this. It's all just making my head hurt. Just making my head hurt. All right. I think that's all I got. Do I want to do this? I've got one more from the justice file, and I hate to close with this. In fact, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just... go to Joel Osteen. Really? Joel Osteen is going to have a Sunday virtual, or I guess he did already, because it's Easter Sunday. By the way, happy Resurrection Sunday, everybody. We celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ on a daily basis here at the McBurney compound. So forgive me if I didn't open with the traditional lip service to Easter, okay? I'm sorry. But Joel Osteen, he's given the big time lip service. A virtual service including Mariah Carey, Kanye West, and Tyler Perry. Three of the leading Christian evangelists. Three of the great theologians of our age. Going to address. All right. Get out of here, Osteen. Guy makes me sick. let's see. I can't do the article about the lady with the Easter eggs. Yeah, well, I'll do it. All right. Flagler County Sheriff out in Florida. They started getting calls from residents throughout the county. Residents were telling the police that they were finding plastic Easter eggs in their mailboxes containing... there we go. Finally got to me. This story makes me physically ill. That's what it is. The Easter eggs contained pornographic images and references to local churches. And the person arrested, she was caught in the act with a carload of pornographic images and plastic Easter eggs, is a 42-year-old woman. A 42-year-old woman is stuffing Easter eggs filled with pornography in mailboxes. Okay, that's just a sad commentary on the state of femininity in America. She claims she distributed over 400 of them. She was charged with distributing obscene material, and she's in jail. But she won't get what she deserves. And that's it. I think I'm just going to let the music take us out, folks, because I am just I'm upset, as you can well imagine. I feel like everything we've known up until now is is literally hanging in the balance of decisions that we're all going to make over the next 2 weeks. And so this is a time to pray. This is a time to go to the Word of God and fill your mind with wisdom. And this is a time to be brave. And this is a time to use common sense. This is a time to look back at what our parents, our grandparents, and our great-grandparents did in times like this. And look to God first and look to our ancestors for guidance. And we might be able to take back what we've basically handed over to our greatest enemies. The nakedly ambitious, cowardly politicians and the terrified, unambitious, whining children who elected them. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life. Check them out on the web. I want to thank my other brother, Darryl, for making it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.